for curb appeal that lasts, shop Labor Day Extra Big Deals at Lowe's. For a limited time, get 50% off all Holland pavers. Plus, save $110 on the Ego Power Plus 56-volt, 2.5-amp-hour blower trimmer combo kit. Now just $249. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's. In-store and online. Valid through 9/7. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. Holland pavers offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Cheers and Prime Social. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back on ESPN 97.5. Good question. And Lamont says, Sports Illustrated wants to do a Houston sports cover. They need the best player from each team. Obviously, James Harden. I guess it would be DeSean, although Sports Illustrated might want JJ. Now, yeah, if it's the best...
It's DeSean now. I know they would probably go JJ, but it's not... I don't think it's JJ. Do you?
Well, D-Hop is the best at
actually,
his
it is, it
position.
Is, D-Hop would be the best player right now.
He's the best at his position.
But he wouldn't be the choice.
In the league, and DeSean's not.
No, but who's the best on the team? Okay, who would Sports Illustrated go with?
DeSean
or JJ? Because it wouldn't be D-Hop.
I don't know, because of popularity, it might be JJ.
I mean, it could be JJ.
He's not the best player. Actually, DeSean is the best player on the team.
They could
because they're you can win without D-Hop having a game. You almost can't win.
That happened the last game.
Yeah.
JJ, Harden, and Verlander, would you be upset if they did that? I mean, that's playing the hits right there.
Yeah.
Justin Verlander, J.J. Watt.
Verlander's probably the pick for the Astros anyway.
Yeah, he's got more cachet than Bregman.
Is he the best player on the team?
You know, might be. Might be. It's we're sitting here having to argue. You know, it's what a year where George Springer's sitting there going, hey, guys, don't forget me. I got 38 home runs over here. No big deal. I missed part of the year. Hey, guys, just trying to get to 40 home runs out of the leadoff spot. Don't mind me over here.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing my business.
Somebody made the point, and I think it was Kyle, said who was more valuable, obviously, in the World Series, Springer or Verlander? It was obviously Springer. He was the MVP of the World Series. Yeah. But you don't get there without Verlander. That's why, again, you know, going back to that whole AJ thing yesterday, if you could only have one of those guys, the Verlander is the most valuable because he would be the last guy you would want to lose that you could afford to lose and win the World Series.
But that's the nature of being a one-man show versus, you know, an eight-man show.
That's baseball.
Yeah, well, or actually a nine in the AL, the DH. So,
I mean, what football player could you afford to lose least?
A quarterback has an inordinate amount.
What Texan could you afford to lose least?
But we just talked about D-Hop's the best player on the team.
Well, he's the best player, but he's certainly not the most valuable. DeSean is by far.
Yeah, but that's an inherent bias to a position.
That's the same thing you're talking about with pitching. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why you can't do MVPs like that. That's why Cy Young is there. For that.
But that's why a quarterback always usually wins the MVP or the Heisman.
Yeah, but pitchers rarely win MVP.
Right. Verlander has, though.
He has, but it's not happening this year.
Yeah. No.
Matter of fact, will Verlander will he finish in the top five? I think he will.
He might.
I think he will.
But it's so close with Cole. Cole should finish sixth then.
Yeah. I mean, you could, and if you ask who the most dominant of the two are, I would say right now Cole. I mean, Cole right now feels like he will do in you, your mom's,
again,
your family. Justin Cole, I mean, Garrett Cole is looking to strike out, or Derek Cole, sometimes as we call him too, is looking to strike out everybody. He's looking to embarrass everybody.
Like, again,
he's getting mad if people step up to the plate like, oh, I'm sorry, you want some of this again? Let me see if I can embarrass you this time.
And we're talking about a guy who over 18 innings gave up two hits in Verlander. Two hits over 18 innings and an 18-inning stretch. And Cole is probably more dominant. That's ridiculous. Cole is probably more dominant than JV. especially now. It just seems like now this has got to, it didn't carry over really into the postseason last. I think that this year, as confident as Cole is right now, I don't think it matters who he's facing. He is going to dominate. That dude is going to dominate. What a deal if, God forbid, Verlander loses a game. You got that. That's what you call a stopper. When you got Cole up next, that dude is going to go, okay, I got this. Now, watch this. And then followed by Greinke. And then the series is over. Then the series is over, hopefully. Justin wants to talk about the Cougs. What's up, Justin?
Hey, fellas. A couple questions, and I kind of want to get your opinion. I know when y'all have Dana on live, Houston has him for, is he signed for 5 years? Is that what his?
He did.
Is it 4 or 5 years?
It's 5 years. But it's okay, basically, well, it's basically unbreakable through 3 years.
Okay. Well, you know, when he's on y'all show and y'all talk to him, and I kind of get the vibe, and I kind of feel like, you know, he likes Houston. He's happy in Houston, and he's not going to go anywhere. And unless I misunderstood or misheard what they were talking about yesterday on Golic and Wingo, that, one, I kind of feel like they contradicted themselves because they keep saying that he's primarily in a rebuild year, you know, like he's not worried about winning this year. And I mean, it's kind of hard to believe. I know you like to win every year, but like he's preparing himself since he is there for so long, you know, he's trying to build his team so he can win, you know, in a few years and not now.
Yes, that's accurate. You know, it's a big picture.
Well, Golic and Wingo's Kate kind of said, you know, I feel like he's in a rebuild year, but he keeps saying, no, he's there to win now. But, you know, I don't know if he can't – I guess he just can't come out and say that. But they keep saying, well, don't lie to us. Don't lie to us and tell us, no, you're not in a rebuild year. But then you are in a rebuild year. So that kind of confused me. And then, two, they said that if – just so – maybe hypothetically, if Michigan showed up and – throwed a bunch of money at him, that he'd be gone in a heartbeat. And I kind of wanted to feel, you know, get y'all's opinion on that.
That is I heard, well, Jerome, I heard Jerome Solomon say that the other night with Fred and AJ. And that's incorrect. That is incorrect. I really do not believe that he would take a Michigan job. I don't believe that. He loves Houston. He wants to be in Houston. He's going to be in Houston. He has made that clear with the contract that he signed. It cannot be more obvious that this is where he wants to be. So no, if Michigan, I don't believe that. I ain't buying it. I will. I'll ask him because I heard that the other.
I wouldn't even ask. I'd hate to put him on the. I wouldn't want to put anybody on the spot like that and then have that soundbite or that quote if he ever did leave. You know what I mean? Because you never know what will happen at any program at any time.
Right.
It's just really tough. I was thinking of this. Why are coaches given automatic guaranteed? You know, we talk about players, and one of the reasons that people like the NFL is that you don't just get free money. You get free money up to a point, but then there is something to be said about earning the money. And I know the players want everything guaranteed. I obviously get that, but that's not the best thing for the team if you don't have to earn any of your paycheck beyond a certain amount of guaranteed money. Why are college coaches, or any coaches for that matter, who are paid the monster salaries they're getting now, relatively speaking, why don't they, let's say for, and we'll use just Dana as an example, why wouldn't you have a contract where you say, okay, first 3 years are guaranteed. This is the rate. It's $5 million a year, whatever. The first 3 years are guaranteed, but it's university option on year four, mutual option in year four.
Because the coach won't do that. I mean, because they all have agents and they're smarter than that.
And I have argued this. I mean, college coaches have too much power. They have way too much leverage.
Well, because you want them. Now, if it is a situation like, okay, let's just take Tony Levine, you know, who walked into a situation and could, thank you for the job. Normally, it's, man, we got to have that guy, got to give him everything. What does he want? What does he want to get him here? Sometimes it's, hey, You know what? We're going to give you this job. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You know what the difference is? In the NFL, it's not as competitive for a single coach, and everybody's on the same basic playing field. I mean, the very best jobs are already taken with the best teams, and it's the lower-level teams. In college, the big difference is there's such a competitive you have so much competition for the name brand coaches or the best coaches, and it can pop at a major university like Michigan at any point. Well, like, when do you see, oh, the Patriots came open?
Wait.
Like, that doesn't happen. Oh, Green Bay. This year, Green Bay came open, but I would argue that by the time an NFL job comes open, it's not a great job. In college, when is it not a good job at A&M or Texas or Michigan or Florida?
Wasn't Green Bay a good job because you had Aaron Rodgers? I mean,
some would argue it's that he's not always the easiest to get along with.
No, he's not. He's certainly not. But look at USC right now. If he wins 9 games or 10 games, if Urban Meyer says he wants to go there, guess what? Clay is out. Beat it. Because we're going to get Urban Meyer. Yep. I don't care that you won 10 games and you're going and you've got the right trajectory.
That's the Brian Gain mode.
Absolutely.
Nick Caserio.
Nick Caserio. You just got Nick Caserio'd. Yep.
Which doesn't mean anything right now. No. Nick Caserio may look at the, like, how, hey. I don't get a pick in the first round until I'm 50?
Right.
That's no good.
I'm not going there. Month in and he's already headed to Michigan. He's 1-3.
Troy's like, why is Michigan going after Dana right now? It's a dumb conversation.
Yeah.
But I get it hypothetically. And I think that's fair that Houston, but you can win now. Based on what you've said, Houston certainly doesn't consider this a give up at quarterback.
They're not.
They like the kid at quarterback a lot.
They
right?
like him. I'm going to tell you this. He can throw better than De'Aaron King can. He can throw the ball better than De'Aaron can. And God forbid, Derek is an unbelievable athlete. He was not throwing the ball well at all these first 4 games, at all. He missed a lot of throws. I mean, and this is not Dana's. This is not coming from Dana. This is coming from me. I watched all the games. He was off. I don't think he's completed a pass 30 yards down the field. Maybe a couple. But good Lord, they're not throwing in the towel. They really think the tune can play. They think the tune. I've asked Dana about. I was asking him about it this summer. I was like, "How's Tune?" He goes, "He's a really good player. He's a really good quarterback." If you think that this team is throwing in the towel, you're wrong. This is not a tank job. They're not tanking. They're going to try to win. They've got a couple more guys that are injured that are probably going to redshirt now too. Well, maybe we can ask Dana about it when he joins us. As a matter of fact, he will be joining us in 16 minutes right here on ESPN 97.5.
Time for me to tell you about Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC. You know, our hometown baseball team has a lot of guys who are buying vehicles from Craig DeSurf. And one of the reasons is because word spread quickly that you can get great deals out there, and the selection is incredible at Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC, but it's also the way that they treat people. From the service department, from the sales department, there's never any hustling or hardcore sales tactics. I mean, they're not doing that in Angleton. Are you kidding me? This is really, they operate like a small town dealership in terms of their values and how they treat you, but with a big city amount of vehicles. In fact, bigger than the big city because they have the space to offer you 311 vehicles right now in stock. So make sure that you go get your vehicles down in Angleton at Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC, whether it's a Chevy Silverado, the GMC Yukon, or maybe you're looking for a Buick Enclave as a crossover vehicle. You can find what you're looking for at Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC.
ESPN 97.5.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Cheers and Prime Social. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hi, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, Dana's going to join us here at the bottom of the hour. We were just talking about, I wonder if De'Aaron King would approach Dana, and I wonder if NFL scouts would tell De'Aaron King, dude, you got a better shot being a wide receiver.
I think they might tell him that if he asks. The question's going to be, will he heed that early, or will he just say, okay, if that's the case, we'll do it when the time comes. Because that's, you know, that could be something he could say, hey, I'm playing college ball right now, and I want to be a college quarterback. And I totally get that. And if that's what he says, and he says, you know what, and if we want to switch, we'll do like Julian Edelman did and switch once we get to the pros. He's got experience as a wide receiver. That would also make sense. I just think at he's listed at 5'11", which means he's probably going to come in at about 5'10", 192 pounds. He's got a wide receiver's background. I think his best chance is to start putting in tape at wide receiver so that teams can start to picture him and start to really focus in on how he gets out of his breaks, his instincts as a wide receiver, his hands, so they can start to see him as a wide receiver, because he's going to run a fast time. And if he puts in some really good wide receiver tape, you know, you're talking about a potential day two pick who's going to be at if he's 5'10", 192 pounds, for example, that's pretty good size. That's a pretty decent size for an NFL slot receiver. And if he can run in a 4.4s, I'm telling you, those guys go in the third round on a regular basis. I don't see why he can't be drafted higher than Tajay Sharpe was when he came out of Western Kentucky and went to the Tennessee Titans. So I don't think it's a bad move. But the other argument is, okay, if he needs to make the move, he'll make it later. But let him finish out his eligibility as a quarterback, because you only get one chance to play college football, and he wants to be a quarterback. I totally get that. But in the NFL, he's not going to be a quarterback.
No.
Not accurate enough as a passer, not consistent enough.
You think that Braxton Miller Braxton Miller had been at wide receiver the whole time, he may have been better at it.
He did make a switch his senior year, yeah. So he did try to make that switch. And obviously he listened to advice from somebody, but he was also, I mean, they had a lot of quarterbacks over there.
You remember Austin Robinson was the quarterback at Episcopal, and everybody told him, dude, go to safety. You got a chance to get in the league. No, I want to play. I want to play quarterback. He went to UTSA, flamed out He flamed out as a quarterback, ended up at U of H as a safety/linebacker, and had a 21-tackle game. If he'd have done that the whole time, he might be in the league right now as a safety. But the guys want to play quarterback so bad. And even if, you know, you're taking dollars out of your pocket, Derek King might be taking money out of his pocket if he stays at quarterback.
He might be. You know, your guy David Sills was a highly heralded quarterback prospect from the time he was young. And fairly early on, he made the switch over to from quarterback to wide receiver at West Virginia. And I believe he's on, I don't know if it's the practice squad. He's with the Giants. I don't know if he's on the roster or the practice squad. I'll have to check. He's on the practice squad right now. He was
a touchdown
highly
machine.
Highly decorated touchdown machine with a lot of great. It's hard. It's hard being an NFL pro. We talk about it like it can just happen for everybody, but it's really, really hard. David Sills is an incredible ball winner in the air. He ran a pretty good 40 time. He has decent size, but getting open is so critical, getting off the line of scrimmage. And these are things I think De'Aaron King can do. So I love watching him play quarterback. It's a lot of fun. He's splashy. When I do my work as a draft guy, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer that at some point you're going to switch to wide receiver. I'd be interested in seeing him do it under Dana Holgorsen, because Dana Holgorsen's wide receivers can be very productive. And if you're productive and you work out great, you got a chance to move up.
Shane wants to get in here. What do you say, Shane? Shane, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, Shane?
You're on the air, Shane.
I think Holgorsen could do well at Michigan, by the way.
You think?
Harbaugh has not proven himself by any means for the last couple of years.
Is this Shane or Sean?
Again?
Is this Shane or Sean?
What's your name, Shane or Sean?
Shane.
You sure this isn't Shane? What's your favorite whiskey?
My favorite what?
Whiskey.
I'm a Michigan fan. I want him to come and face Harbaugh.
But what's your favorite whiskey?
Favorite whiskey?
Whiskey. If you were to get a drink.
Oh, whiskey.
Yeah, well, if you were to get a drink at a bar, what would it be?
No, I'm a Crown Royal guy.
You're lying. You're a Jameson guy. Jameson and Coke.
Crown Royal guy.
You're
a Crown Royal.
You're a Jameson and Coke guy, yeah. Dell? What are your thoughts?
I'm a Crown Royal and ginger, by the way.
When did you go to sleep?
Crown Royal and ginger.
Shane, when did you go to sleep?
What time did you go to sleep, Shane? Last night.
What time did you go to sleep?
Last night.
I was like 1:30.
1:30? Not 3?
Yeah, I got up for your show, and I get ready for work.
Oh.
What do you do? Do you operate heavy machinery?
Absolutely not.
What do you do?
Absolutely not. I'm an accountant, man.
You're an accountant. You work in front
Absolutely.
Of a you work in front of a computer all day?
Most of the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you like Jameson? Yeah.
Do you like Jameson whiskey?
What are your thoughts on the Astros? Who's better, Garrett Cole or Justin Verlander?
Oh, they're okay. I mean, they're both great pitchers. Fine.
That's it. Nice try, Sean. Nice try. They're okay. He tried to remember everything he said so he could flip it. What's your favorite drink? He goes, Crown and Royal. Ginger. You mean kind of like Jameson and Coke?
How are we getting outsmarted by the drunk guy? How is he outsmarting the show?
Yeah, he beat us.
He beat the
phone screener.
Mm.
Hey, I have a question. What's your name?
Shane.
Shauna.
He even had to start with the same first letter?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's begging us to try to figure him out. You know what he is? He is like one of those killers from Mindhunter who's basically just trying to tease us.
All right, taking a break. Dana Holgorsen joins us on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5. What are the odds that Shane / Sean have had a few Jamesons or Crown? Well, you can bet that at my bookie. I'm pretty sure you can get that because there's pretty much everything you want you could possibly. It's unbelievable what you can bet on at my bookie. I got me a little account over there at mybookie.ag. I like to play a little bit. I played the Cougs this week because they're getting 7 at North Texas. Thank you. Good night. I'm taking it. You, my friends, pick whatever you want to pick. They've got every single thing you could possibly think of to bet on. If you're a NASCAR aficionado, if you're an Australian rules football fan, yep, entertainment, cycling, you can bet on cricket, esports, rugby, religion you can bet on. That's right, you can bet on religion, Father TJ. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag, promo code radio. They'll match first 1,000 you put in, mybookie.ag, promo code radio.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Dana Holgorsen Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Chastang Ford, Damaris Barbecue, and HRMP. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's John Lance and Coach Dana Holgorsen.
All right, welcome back on ESPN 97.5. Bringing in the coach, Dana Holgorsen, joining us here on ESPN 97.5. I don't know if you know this, but you made some news this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I also said I wasn't talking about it anymore, so what do you guys want to talk about?
Well, let's talk about North Texas. This has been a game that you've been looking at for a long time because of, you know, they got, first of all, you're friends with Seth. You like Seth. You've known him for a long time. And secondly, this quarterback has been around for like 30 years and been a pretty damn good player too.
He really has. He really has. And, you know, Seth's been there. He's going on his fourth year now. It's another one of these air raid reunions, you know. So, you know, me and Seth spent about 4 years there at Texas Tech. Was really a good player at Oklahoma. Team captain, real tough guy. So, you know, he brings a real physical nature to the air raid passing game, you know, which I respect a lot because we've tried to do the same thing, obviously. But he's done a good job there going into his fourth year, won 9 games 2 of the last 3 years. He's got a quarterback that slings it around. So has done a really good job of replacing Graham Harrell, who is there with him for 3 years and doing good things out at USC as the offensive coordinator. Looks to me like they haven't missed a beat. They're scoring a bunch of points and playing really well.
Now, tell us, because, I mean, this is we're about to get, you know, Clayton tuned. And you and I have talked about it. I've asked you plenty. You know, how is Tune? Tell me about him. What have you seen of him in practice? And you've always said, man, the kid's a good player. Tell us about what we're going to see with Clayton Tune.
This is going to be really good for him and his development. You know, the whole thing, and I'm not avoiding the question. We can talk about whatever y'all want, but the whole thing is about making sure that we understand the most important part of waking up as a student athlete is to make sure you develop the right way, and you do everything you can towards being successful when it comes to being a student athlete. And that's twofold now. I mean, it's doing a good job in the classroom and leaving here with a degree. There's a lot of kids that need to be redshirted to be able to get your degree. It's becoming less and less necessary because there's early enrollees, and with the summertime activities the way that they are from an accountability perspective, guys go to class, you know. So a lot of times they don't need that fifth year to get their degree, but a lot of times they do, you know. And so there's a lot of guys that need to understand the long term. For long term success, you need to be an old 22, 23-year-old when you're playing your last snaps of college football in order to be successful, not only as a team, but as a because of your development as well. So Tune is ready to go. You know, he got 5 games in last year. It wasn't under the best of circumstances. And you know, here we sit right here at 1-3 going into the 5th game. There are different circumstances because we still got an awful lot of football ahead of us, and he needs to take advantage of this situation when it comes to being able to go in there and play ball.
Yeah, I got a little heated this week. I mean, with some of the stuff, there's been so much speculation and so many people that are outside and making assumptions about the program. And one of the things that pissed me off is that, you know, anything to do with throwing in the towel or tanking, I think that's an insult to Tune, and I think it's an insult to you, and I think it's an insult to all the other players on the team that, you know, that anyone would think that you don't care about winning this year.
Well, I care an awful lot about winning this Saturday night. And, you know, this coaching staff and this team cares an awful lot about winning this Saturday night. If, you know, the last 3 nights we've been on the practice field, maybe 3 of our better practices that we've had all year. So, you know, a lot of guys are motivated. You know, this news doesn't affect our defense a whole lot, and those guys need to continue to develop and play ball and get better. And, you know, there's a lot of aspects of our offense right now that, you know, we're not gonna just bag the offense and come up with another offense. I mean, the things that we've been working on, the things that Clayton Tune's been working on, the things that Derek King continues to work on, are all things that we've done the last 3 nights. We've had good practices, and I got no reason to believe that we're not going to go be as competitive as we've been for the last 4 games. The 4 games that we've been in have been competitive football games, and somebody's got to win those games and somebody's got to lose those games. And we're not happy about the fact that we lost them. It could have turned and we could have won them. We didn't. That's the way things go, and we got to learn from that. And I think we have, and I think we're going to go put our best foot forward on Saturday night.
Dana, do you you know, I think some of the confusion or some of the questions nationally have arisen from the comments by D.R. King's father. And then D.R. King came out and said, no, I'm going to be with Houston. I'm staying with you. I mean, he made a very strong statement that was issued saying he wants to be a Houston Cougar moving forward. Do you think some of the confusion about what's really going on with D.R. and his plans at University of Houston, do you think that's what has created some confusion for some people? Because it is kind of an unprecedented thing to see a heralded starting quarterback all of a sudden decide. I mean, this is kind of the first time we're seeing this particular type of redshirting.
Yeah, it's new, and I understand that. And you know, I was a part of a lot of the discussions when it came to the intent of the rule. I think the rule is good for the student athlete, you know, and you know, I've been a part of this conversation a bunch in the media, and I think the media is a big part of why there's a lot of speculation out there as far as what's the truth and what's not the truth. Obviously, there always is and there always will be, and I respect that, but I just think it's because it's new when it comes to the rule, and as college coaches, we can utilize this rule any way we want to. There's no guidelines on how you use the rule, and I've said it for a long time. It's good for the student athlete. I may be the first 4 games and then decide to redshirt him because of whatever reason that is. It could be the last 4 games, which I did with about a dozen players last year. I resisted the temptation of playing them game 6, game 7, game 8, and played them game 9 through game 12. you know, or game 10 through 13. You know, that we did that. We played them potentially one or two games early and then two games late. One of the reasons why this rule is in place is my running back story 3 years ago. The kid was a red-shirted freshman, and we had one running back going to Iowa State. We needed him to play. He did. The other two running backs came back week 12, and he hardly played week 12 and week 13. But week 11, he rushed for 195 yards, and we beat Iowa State. So he would have been able to save that year. Now he's sitting here as a, you know, as a true senior at West Virginia, having a decent year, but should have 2 years to play. So I think it's really good for the student athlete, and any way you can utilize it for the betterment and the development of the student athlete, then I'm all for it. And that's what this situation is about.
Yeah, and okay, can talk about building a program too, because you said it. I mean, you've been talking about this since you got here. Is what the heck? How come nobody? This is a young football team. Even though we got seniors, they're still young seniors. Ideally, building a program going forward, Dana, you would love to have as many redshirted guys as possible.
We got about 30 of them right now, you know, which is good for the future. Okay, but nobody wants to hear about that. Everybody wants to hear about what we're going to do to beat North Texas, and I get that, and I understand that, and that's what the walls up and down the walls and the conversations that happen, you know, inside this football facility right now, is not about who's red shirting or who's not red shirting. It's about what we're going to do in practice this afternoon and the game planning and the film study that involves unbeaten North Texas. I can assure you that we got 20 coaches up in here that are studying hard, that are working hard towards what practice is going to look like here this afternoon and what the game plan is going to look like on Saturday night. With that said, there's got to be the behind the scenes work go on that builds the roster the way that you need to be able to build the roster. And it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. There's certain things that happen and certain decisions that happen. You know, I've red-lighted guys, I've green-lighted guys each and every week, and it's a weekly discussion. Did we need that guy to play? And he played. And how many games does he have left? Do we let him dress out? Do we not let him dress out? Is he an emergency player? Is he not an emergency player? Does he even travel? Or do we just go ahead and shut him down for the year? I mean, those discussions that happen over the course of a week, and they're behind the scenes, and there's not a whole lot of people that are privy to those. But that's what we're going to continue to do, because I'm going to be here for a long time, and we're going to build it the right way.
All right. I've asked you this question before, and you said that's simple. I said, okay, what about a guy that doesn't have great hands? How do you get him to catch the football? And well, catch 1,000 balls a day, and then he's going to get better at it. How, with today's rules, do you get better at tackling?
Well, you can tackle once a week, so you know that. For instance, for like, and we don't tackle as a team. You know, we tackle on Saturdays. You know, throughout camp, you can tackle every other day. You can't tackle every day. You can tackle every other day, up to I believe it's 4 days a week throughout camp. And camp only lasts 2 weeks, so that's not a lot of days. And then in spring, you get 15 days in spring. Which you can tackle, I believe it's 8. I believe it's 8 of the 15 you can actually tackle. So when you have those days that you have circled that you can tackle, you need to do a lot of situational football. And you know, we've tallied up, you know, as high as probably 1,000 snaps in spring that we've been able to tackle. So this spring we'll probably line up and tackle about 1,000 times. And you got to teach it the right way. I think our defensive coaches do a really good job of teaching it without truly pulling the trigger, but there's technique that you can do that you can work on, and then you play live football, and there's no better way of seeing if guys have the ability to be able to get people on the ground than playing live football. I guess two things tonight at we have Thursday night football at I believe it's 5 o'clock. I believe at 5 o'clock we're done with our today's a walkthrough for us. Tomorrow's a fast Friday for us. Today is a walkthrough for us. But then after that walkthrough, we line up all the people that aren't going to play on Saturday, and we play tackle football. You know, and we'll get about 40 reps in, and that's good development for our young guys that are redshirting that are going to be able to play live football. And then Saturday night, we get a lineup, and we play about 75 snaps on offense and 75 snaps on defense and about 30 snaps on special teams where there's going to be live situations. And the more ball you play and the more snaps you log, the better you're going to be as a football player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so far, I mean, you would admit tackling has been an issue, hasn't it?
It has, and I think we've improved on it. You know, obviously everybody wants to remember that last snap of the game at Tulane, which – you know, which keeps me up at night, you know. But from game one, we missed an awful lot of tackles. And I think probably the talent that Oklahoma has had something to do with that. But then the next week against Washington State or Prairie View, we tackled better. We had a couple of drives where we didn't tackle very good, and they scored on us. And that was like a first-team guy. And the first, it was one drive was on the first team, and one drive was on the backups that we had there at the end. The next week against Washington State, I think we tackled really well. I mean, and there's a lot of tackles in space based on what Leach does, just spread everybody out and put the ball in play, and you got tackle in space. And I think we did a decent job of that. The next week, you know, I thought it was decent in spurts. And, you know, there's an element of how much gas is in your tank and your ability to be able to tackle. And I think our gas tanks were low, and we didn't tackle as well as we should.
Yeah, that stretch is done, which is nice. You were worried about it all off that 4 games in 19 days. And you know, that's not easy on those kids. That is something that maybe the league.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah, that's.
Well, I don't think it's ever happened. And I don't want to keep beating a dead horse over this. You know, the one that I was really worried about, and you know this very well. I had the Tulane game kind of circled, as in that's the one that really kind of scares more than anything. And Tulane had that game circled too, and that was a big one. I think we played really well. I mean, we started fast. We, you know, scored early, and I just think we just really honestly just ran out of gas and. You know, that's not fair for these kids. I mean, they put in so much work and they put in so much, you know, effort, and we practiced hard and we did everything the right way. And at the end of it, we didn't have enough left, you know, and that's unfortunate. But, you know, we're not throwing the towel in. We had a good weekend off, and it was amazing. We turned, you know, we GPS all this stuff, as you well know. Our GPS numbers, which there's about 100 guys on the team, right? I mean, everybody wants to circle one guy, but there's about 100 on the team, and the GPS numbers on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday were better than they've been all year, you know, just based on having a couple of days truly off that we can kind of recover.
Nice. Well, Dana Holgorsen is here, and he's brought to you HRMP by Damaris Barbecue and Chastang Ford. Let's talk about Chastang Ford. I got in my expedition. I got the same one that you did, Dana. And my car buying experience at Chastang was unbelievable. Patrick and Joe do a great job. UH fans, Dana, they got a if they're going to get a Ford, they should get it from UH people.
They're wonderful people now, you know, and they're huge University of Houston supporters, but more importantly, they're Houstonians, and they're here to make your experience really well.
Yep, and go there, and it's an experience. Now, these are the Ford truck experts, so if you have commercial vehicles, fleets that you need to get, they're going to take care of you, and they know exactly what truck for whatever job. They've seen everything, so they know what to do. But they're also in the retail business for all of us. I've got my expedition there. They got 0% financing going on right now. It's unbelievable. I'm telling you, you're going to get your best price. It's all just 5 minutes from downtown on 610, just two exits from 59, Homestead, not Hempstead, Homestead. It's Chastang Ford.
G'day, mate.
You're listening to the Dana Holgorsen Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Chastang Ford, Damaris Barbecue, and HRMP. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's John Lance and Coach Dana Holgorsen.
All right, another segment with the coach, Dana Holgorsen, right here on ESPN 97.5, 7 o'clock at North Texas. And it's going to be nothing going to be easy about that. This is another one that you had circled. But I happen to know that you got to watch a little football on Saturday, Coach, after, you know, you had Thursday off, so you got to watch a little bit, watching some of the you think SMU is a pretty good football team right now?
Yeah, I do. I got my first glimpse of them, you know, watched them briefly on Saturday, which I mean, winning at TCU, I know from experience, is not easy. I mean, Gary obviously does a really good job, and SMU went in there and won by, what, 14? And then we've been studying them all week. North Texas's game two was against SMU, and I studied their offense, and they're doing a heck of a job on offense. Shane Buechel is spinning that thing now, and you know they got that. I think they brought in like 32 transfers over the last 2 years. Sonny's been there going into his second year, and has really transferred that thing up. And they got some players now. And then their defensive coaches are like, you know, SMU's flying around on defense and playing well. So they beat North Texas. I think it was 38-14 or 38-17, something like that. They're 4-0 and they're playing well.
Yeah. Not only them. I mean, the whole UCF. While they lost to Pitt, I mean, that's a top 25 program. Memphis, Tulsa. It's the conference is looking good. Looking really good.
Yeah, our schedule doesn't slow down anytime soon. I mean, the thing about it is I'm it's here. It's a Thursday, and it's you know a couple days before we play, and I'm like, what do we do here the rest of the day? I'm already caught up, ready for practice because we're used to doing things a day short, and here we had about 9 days to prepare for this one, and then next week we have a bye week, you know. So kind of wish that bye week came after those first four games, but we're gonna go play Saturday night, and then we have a bye week, and then we got Cincinnati coming to town, which will be mid October. And will be our first true home game, you know, that conference home game, and then we got SMU coming after that. It's got a lot of really good teams on the schedule moving forward.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Dana Holgorsen with us here on ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Damaris HR&P and Chastang Ford. So you know, you said it doesn't change much, but. But Toon isn't as athletic as D'Eriq. There aren't many guys in the country that are as athletic as D'Eriq is. How does that change things up for you?
You know, it doesn't change much, honestly. We were doing a lot of good things in the run game. D'Eriq is a part of that, but Toon's he's a 6'2", 205 guy, but is a 4'5" guy. You know, so. He doesn't have the explosion that D'Eriq has, which, like you said, not many people do. He doesn't have the flat-out, straight-ahead speed, make-you-miss, start-and-stop ability that D'Eriq has. D'Eriq has that as much as anybody I've had since Tavon Austin, you know, which is saying something. But D'Eriq's got, as you all know, that kind of twitch. Toon is more of a straight-ahead guy, but still has really good athletic ability and still has the ability to be able to move forward. So he's still a threat in the run game now, and you know is a bigger guy, you know, so we'll be able to do a little bit more pocket type stuff, but we can also do a lot of things with his feet. So we got to be careful, you know. Obviously, there's always the element of you got to keep him out of harm's way, which we've been coaching him the same way, and I expect him to follow the directions when it comes to getting on the ground and protecting yourself as well.
You knew that, and it's especially important with the D'Eriq's decision, but you knew it was going to, there was going to be work to be done to switch, to implement your offense, which is a lot different than what Kendall Briles had run at U of H previously. After four games, where do you think that stands in terms of the growth of this team in acclimating to what you want to do versus where they had been over the last few years?
It's just constant work ethic towards implementing what you want to do. If you look back at all the numbers that we've had, and this is one thing that I told D'Eriq, and my job as the head coach is just to tell them what reality is and tell them what the truth is and tell them what things are based on previous experiences. If you look back at the numbers, you know, going back from, you know, Case Keenum, you know, when I was here year one compared to year two, you know, look at what those numbers are and how they changed year two. Going, you know, and Brandon Whedon, they kept the same offense when I left, right? So year one, what we had, which was pretty good, going into year two, the numbers improved. You know, Geno Smith going year one, we won that Orange Bowl and was 10-3, and the next year we're in the Big 12 and we're only, you know, I think we're 8-5 at that year or something like that. But the numbers were just astronomically different offensively, you know. And same thing happened to Clint Trickett. The same thing happened to Skylar Howard. The same thing happened to Will Greer. The numbers in year two are astronomically different. And that's one thing, you know, in fairness to him, he's given so much. Derek's given so much to the University of Houston. He's been here for 4 years, and he's went through four off seasons. He's been under four offensive coordinators, four new systems, three head coaches. There's been zero stability here, and that's frustrating for young men. That's frustrating for football players. It's frustrating for Case Keenum because he's learned his eighth system in 8 years. You know, it's just. And the idea that Derek is able to be able to just kind of have stability and be able to learn things to where things actually make a little bit more sense, and he's not having to think as much when he's under center, or whether he's been shotgun, obviously, is something that was pretty appealing to him. And everybody that's coming back within the program, offensively, defensively, special teams-wise, year two is always a little bit easier. You know, so, and we're not thinking about year two right now. We're thinking about North Texas. I'm just telling you what the rationale is behind the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're always going to be better when you're more familiar with it, obviously. So how are you health wise? How's Porter?
He should be good to go. You know, those running backs take a beating, and that, which is why you got to have about five of them, you know, and which we do. Had a great first half. And his back kind of locked up. You know, Kyle's got a whole bunch of muscles, and so those muscles tend to lock up at times. There's nothing long term with him whatsoever. So he's been in a green jersey. We're trying to keep the contact off of him, but he should be good to go. You know, overall health. You know, we've had a couple of guys get nicked up and dinged up. You know, but typically I think we're going to be good, and I think he should be good to go.
Yeah. My back locks up a lot too, probably from all the muscles.
You have no muscles.
probably all the muscles.
It's all that core work.
Yeah.
You have no muscles now. Our guy Alonzo Highsmith has muscles. He's in my office. He's scouting for the Browns. He's got a lot of muscles. You do not.
He has Coors Light muscles.
Yeah, you're damn right. I do. You're damn. Do I have a Coors Light spot here? No. Damn it. Perfect spot. Yeah. No.
He's got a literal six pack.
Back locks up all the time. All the time.
And
now I got the explanation. I didn't know why, but now I know. Dana Holgorsen with us each week right here on ESPN 97.5. Coach, go get him Saturday night. We appreciate it.
All right. See you guys.
Right. We'll see you, Coach.
There he is. You know what? Because I got a lot of testosterone.
Yeah, could be why. But there's other people who don't have that, John, and that's why they've got to go to Men's T Clinic. And Men's T Clinic is the place to go. It's also a place to, I want to say this, if you are somebody who is really struggling with excessive fatigue, you feel like a couch potato, you feel like you have belly fat that you cannot get rid of, or maybe it's getting worse and worse, and yet you haven't changed your workout or your diet, this is a telltale sign of low testosterone. And it's something that happens in like 33% of men who are approaching or over the age of 40. But some of you have gone and tried to see if another company could make the difference and you didn't get the same results, go to Men's T Clinic, give them a shot, because they understand how to treat you and how to get your dosage exactly the way it should be so that you are living your optimal life and getting the best results from your testosterone treatments. Men'sTClinic.com. Five locations in Houston, Pearland, Pasadena, Cypress Spring, and of course the Heights location, which is where I go. Very convenient, very easy to find. It's Men'sTClinic.com.